Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After Midnight.
The plantation house had been open to the public for less than 2 years when she accepted a seasonal job there as a tour guide. She had visited the property once as a child, long before the restoration began, when it consisted of a locked house, an overgrown drive, and several crumbling outbuildings barely visible through the trees. By the time she returned as an adult, the grounds had been cleared, the porches rebuilt, and the main rooms furnished with pieces collected from the region. The house now operated as a historical museum, offering guided tours from early spring through the end of October. The museum director made it clear during her interview that the house's history would not be softened for visitors. The original owner had built his wealth through the land and the labor of enslaved people who had lived and worked there. The tours discussed both the family who occupied the main house and the people whose lives had made that household possible, although few written records about them had survived. Her job was to learn the approved tour, answer questions when she could, and admit when the historical record did not provide an answer. She would also help open the house each morning, check the rooms after the final group, and make certain visitors did not wander beyond the ropes or enter areas closed for restoration. During her first weeks, most of her attention went toward remembering names, dates, and the correct route through the house. The tour began in the entrance hall, continued through the parlor and dining room, then climbed the main staircase to three furnished bedrooms. Visitors exited through a side hall near the original kitchen wing. The former owner's study was not included. It sat behind the dining room at the end of a narrow passage. Water damage had weakened portions of the ceiling and floor, so the door remained locked. Several service corridors and a steep back staircase were also closed because they were too narrow and uneven for tour groups. By the end of her second week, she could lead the tour without notes. She enjoyed the work more than she had expected. Some visitors came because of an interest in architecture or local history. Others seemed mostly interested in whether the house was haunted. The staff never encouraged those questions, but they did not deny that visitors had reported unusual experiences. The most common story involved a woman seen on the upper balcony. She was usually described as wearing a pale dress and standing near the railing outside the largest bedroom. Several visitors claimed to have seen her while approaching from the drive, only to discover that no one was upstairs. Others noticed a shape in photographs taken from the lawn, although the images were rarely clear enough to prove anything. The guides had heard the story so often that it had become part of the background of working there. When visitors asked directly, they explained that no one knew who the woman might have been. Several women had lived in the house over the decades, and photographs of only a few had survived. She gave the stories little thought. Old houses attracted ghost stories, especially houses connected to difficult histories. Visitors arrived expecting to feel something, and expectation could turn a curtain or reflection into something mysterious. Her first unusual experience happened on a quiet Tuesday afternoon. She had finished leading the final tour and was checking the second floor after the visitors left. Another employee was locking the gift shop across the courtyard, leaving her alone in the main house. When she entered the largest bedroom, she noticed that the balcony door stood open. It had been closed during the tour. Visitors were not permitted outside because sections of the railing were still under repair. A velvet rope stretched across the doorway, and the door was secured with a small hook near the top. The rope remained in place, but the hook had been lifted. She stepped closer and looked outside. The balcony was empty, the afternoon air still. Nothing suggested that a gust of wind had forced the door open. She closed it, replaced the hook, and continued through the house. When she mentioned the incident to the director, he suggested the hook had not been set correctly that morning. The explanation was reasonable, and she accepted it. Several days later, a visitor stopped her during a tour and asked whether another guide was working upstairs. The group had just entered the dining room, but the woman kept glancing back toward the hall. She explained that she had seen someone cross the upper landing while the group was still outside. There was no other guide in the house. So after the tour, she went upstairs to make certain no one had separated from the group. Every room was empty. The balcony door was open again. This time she was certain she had checked it before the museum opened. She closed it and tested the hook several times. It held securely. The open door did not frighten her. The bedroom remained bright and quiet, and the breeze from outside carried the scent of grass and warm earth. Still, she began to wonder about the woman visitors claimed to see. The activity near the back staircase was different. She usually heard footsteps there late in the day, when the house was quiet and few visitors remained on the grounds. The sound came from behind the dining room wall, where the narrow service passage led toward the locked study. At first, she assumed another employee was using the back stairs. Then she learned that no one entered that section without the director's permission. The footsteps were slow and heavy. They crossed the hidden passage, paused near the study, and stopped. Whenever she checked after a tour, the passage door remained locked. She tried to explain the sound as noise traveling through the old house. Someone walking upstairs might seem to be behind the wall. Pipes and beams could make noises that resembled footsteps. Then she heard them while standing inside the passage. The director had asked her to retrieve a box of brochures stored near the back staircase. She unlocked the narrow door and stepped into the corridor. The air was warm and stale, and one weak bulb illuminated the unfinished walls. She found the box and lifted it from the shelf. A floorboard creaked behind her. She turned, expecting to see the director in the doorway. The passage was empty. Another step sounded farther down the corridor, and then another. The footsteps moved toward her from the direction of the former owner's study. She stood motionless, holding the box against her chest. The passage offered nowhere to move except back toward the door. The light above her flickered once, and the air seemed to press inward. The footsteps stopped several feet away. Nothing stood in front of her, yet she felt with sudden certainty that she had entered a place where she was not welcome. She backed toward the dining room without turning around. As soon as she stepped through the doorway, the pressure lifted. She locked the passage and carried the brochures outside. When the director asked whether something had happened, she said only that the corridor was darker than she expected. That evening, she walked toward her car and glanced back at the house. A woman stood on the upper balcony. She could see the pale outline of her dress and one hand resting against the railing. Before she could call to anyone, the figure turned toward the house and disappeared through the closed bedroom door. She remained beside her car, staring at the balcony. The woman was gone, and the bedroom door behind her appeared to be closed. On the drive home, she tried to convince herself that she had seen a curtain or a reflection, but the figure had looked too solid. She had seen one hand resting on the railing and watched the woman turn toward the house. The following morning, she went directly upstairs. The balcony door was secured, the hook still in place, and the room looked exactly as it had the evening before. From inside, she could see there was nowhere on the balcony for anyone to hide and no entrance except through the bedroom. She said nothing to the director. For several days, the house remained quiet. The balcony door stayed closed, and no visitors reported seeing the woman. She began to wonder whether the figure and the presence near the study were connected. Then the activity in the back of the house became more aggressive. During an afternoon tour, a heavy knock sounded from behind the dining room wall. Several visitors looked toward the narrow door leading into the closed service passage. She continued speaking, hoping the noise would not repeat. Three more knocks followed, spaced evenly apart. A visitor asked whether restoration work was taking place nearby. She explained that no one was working in that section and began moving the group toward the staircase. As the last person left the room, something struck the wall hard enough to rattle the framed documents beside the door. After the tour, she asked the director whether anyone had entered the passage. He confirmed that the only key remained locked in his office. When she told him about the noise, he suggested that sound had traveled through the old walls or that a shutter had come loose outside. His answer was reasonable, but his expression told her the incident did not surprise him. Several evenings later, she was closing the house with another guide when the handle on the former owner's study began to turn. It moved slowly, stopped, and returned to its original position. The door remained locked. The other guide admitted she had seen it happen before. A former employee had refused to enter the service passage alone, and another had quit after claiming someone followed him. From the study to the back staircase, she insisted nothing had ever harmed anyone. but it was clear the staff knew more than they discussed. From that point on, she noticed how differently people treated the two hauntings. Visitors spoke freely about the woman on the balcony, and employees repeated those stories without much concern. The woman appeared and disappeared, but no one seemed frightened of her. The study was different. Guides hurried past the passage during closing, and the director checked the lock himself each evening. Whenever visitors asked about the room, the explanation about damaged flooring came quickly. A week later, the director asked her to help another employee retrieve boxes stored near the back staircase. She nearly refused, but she did not want fear to interfere with her work, especially when she would not be alone. For the first several trips, nothing happened. On the final trip, however, the other employee stepped outside to answer a phone call, leaving her alone for less than a minute. As she reached for the last box, the study door slammed from inside. The sound exploded through the narrow corridor. She dropped the box and hurried toward the dining room. Heavy footsteps struck the floor behind her. They followed her all the way to the door. She reached the dining room and pulled it shut. The footsteps stopped on the other side, but then something pressed slowly against the wood. The handle shifted beneath her palm. She released it and stepped back. The lock remained engaged, but a sudden coldness spread through the dining room. When the employee returned, he found her standing near the table, pale and shaking. This time, she told him everything. He listened quietly before explaining that restoration workers had once reported seeing a man near the study. No one agreed on his appearance, but several had described the same sensation of being ordered out. Tools had been moved, doors had slammed, and workers sometimes heard a voice behind them when no one else was nearby. The director believed the presence was the former owner. The study had been the center of his authority, and the service passage was where workers had waited to be summoned or dismissed. If some part of him remained, he apparently still believed those spaces belonged to him. She asked why no one had warned her. The employee explained that the museum did not want the property reduced to ghost stories when its documented history was already difficult and important. Staff members were expected to focus on what could be proven. She understood the reason, but it did not make her feel safer. That evening, she waited while the director completed the final lockup. Before she could tell him what had happened, footsteps crossed the floor above them. They both looked toward the ceiling. The steps moved along the upper hallway and stopped directly over the dining room. The director went upstairs and she followed. The balcony door stood open. The velvet rope remained in place and the hook had been lifted cleanly from the frame. The balcony beyond it was empty. The director closed and secured the door. As they turned to leave, she glanced toward the glass. For a moment, the reflection showed a woman standing behind them in a pale dress. She was not looking at them. Her face was turned toward the back of the house, toward the study. The director did not see the woman reflected in the balcony door, but his expression had already changed after hearing the footsteps above the dining room. He secured the hook, checked the empty balcony once more, and suggested they finish closing the house together. The following morning, he asked her to arrive before the museum opened. He admitted that stories about the former owner had circulated since the earliest restoration work. People had heard footsteps near the study, found tools moved inside locked areas, and occasionally felt someone standing behind them in the service passage. One worker claimed a man's voice had ordered him to leave, although the director had always dismissed the reports as exhaustion, imagination, or sounds traveling through the old house. The woman on the balcony was different. She had been reported for years, but no one had ever felt threatened by her. Visitors who saw her usually described sadness or the impression that she was waiting for something. Whatever lingered near the study seemed angry whenever anyone entered what had once been the owner's private part of the house. The director offered to remove her from closing duties. She considered it, but she enjoyed the work and did not want to be driven away by something she could not see. They agreed that no one would enter the service passage alone and that the study would remain locked until the restoration could be reevaluated. For the next several weeks, the house was quiet. She continued leading tours and became more comfortable discussing the history of the people who had lived and worked there, although she avoided lingering near the dining room passage. The silence behind that wall never felt empty. It felt watchful, as though the presence near the study had withdrawn without leaving. Near the end of the season, a storm arrived shortly before closing. The final tour was canceled, and most of the staff went home. before the rain became heavier. She remained with the director and a maintenance employee to check the windows and protect several displays from water leaking through the older sections of the house. While the director went to the museum office for plastic coverings and the maintenance employee checked the shutters outside, she stayed upstairs placing towels beneath the balcony door. The wind pressed hard against the windows and thunder rolled close enough to shake the glass. As she finished, she heard a door close downstairs. She stepped into the hallway and listened. Heavy footsteps crossed the dining room below and entered the service passage. She assumed one of the men had come back inside until the steps continued toward the study. The lights flickered and went out. Enough gray light came through the windows for her to reach the staircase. When she arrived downstairs, the dining room was empty, but the door to the service passage stood open. The director had locked it earlier, and she had watched him place the key in his pocket. A faint light glowed from the corridor. The single bulb near the back staircase was still burning, even though the rest of the house had lost power. She remained in the doorway, trying to decide whether to call for the others. Then she heard uneven footsteps farther inside, followed by the sound of something scraping across the floor. For a moment, she worried that the maintenance employee had entered from another door and fallen. She called into the passage but received no answer. The footsteps stopped and the study door slowly opened. Darkness filled the room beyond it. Cold air moved down the corridor, carrying the stale smell of dust and damp plaster. She backed away, but the dining room door slammed behind her before she could leave. The handle would not turn. Heavy footsteps resumed inside the passage, moving steadily toward her. She pulled at the door and called for help, but the storm outside swallowed her voice. The closer the footsteps came, the more difficult it became to breathe. She felt the same command she had sensed during her first encounter in the corridor, only stronger now. The presence did not merely want her out of the passage, it wanted her out of the house. A man's voice came from the darkness. She could not understand the words, but the anger behind them was unmistakable. The weak bulb flickered, briefly revealing the outline of someone standing near the study. Before she could see anything clearly, the light dimmed again. Then the balcony door opened upstairs. She heard it strike the bedroom wall, followed by rapid footsteps crossing the upper hallway. They were lighter than the steps in the service passage and moved with purpose toward the main staircase. The coldness in the dining room weakened. The figure in the corridor stopped and the heavy footsteps retreated toward the study as the lighter steps descended from above. The dining room door opened behind her. The maintenance employee stood there, soaked from the rain. While checking the shutters, he had looked up and seen a woman in a pale dress standing at an upstairs window. She had raised one arm and pointed toward the rear of the house. Assuming someone was trapped inside, he had rushed through the front entrance and followed the sound of her pounding on the door. The director returned moments later. Together, they locked the service passage and braced the door until the storm passed. When he checked the corridor, the study door was open, even though its key had never left his pocket. The museum closed for several days while the storm damage was inspected. Before it reopened, the director decided the study and service passage would remain permanently closed to visitors and employees. Whatever the official reason, no one argued with him. She returned to work and finished the season. She never again heard footsteps following her from the study, although the dining room occasionally became cold near the locked passage. Visitors continued to report the woman on the balcony. Sometimes she appeared in the bedroom glass, always looking toward the back of the house. The employee no longer believed she was simply wandering through the rooms where she had once lived. The former owner still seemed convinced that the house belonged to him. The woman remained because she knew better than anyone what he was capable of, and because someone still had to watch him.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now, so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.